Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Pleased to welcome you to All Sides Weekend, as today we talk about the arts with my guest Gerard Charles, who is Artistic Director of Ballet Met, and Stephen Anderson, who is Artistic Director of Catco Phoenix. We will talk about what's going on with these two gentlemen and their respective companies. We will talk about the state of the arts. I hate saying that, but, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. What's the buzz?
What's the buzz in Central Ohio? We'll talk about some holiday fare you might want to take advantage of in the next couple of weeks. I think we all get a little, I mean, we love our families, but enough already after 2 or 3 days of being home with them. I think it's nice to have some place to go during the holidays and get out of the house. So we'll help you with that. And we will invite your phone calls as we proceed for the hour talking about the arts. Gerard Charles, let me begin with you. Barbara Zook, the Columbus Dispatch's arts diva, was going to be our third guest today, but she is iced in at home. But she did send some comments, and her comment was, "Tell Gerard this year's Nutcracker is fabulous. Please congratulate him for a great show." So, talk about the Nutcracker.
Well, that's so wonderful to hear because, of course, the Nutcracker is a very special work. It's not only an important part of our season, but I think for all the dancers in the company, and certainly for myself, it's been a part of our lives since we were children. And it just would not be the holiday season without having the Nutcracker as part of it. And I find that is something I treasure very greatly as well. And this year we invested in putting some new sets in for Act One, which really completed the kind of vision that we were trying to create with the Nutcracker. And, you know, it just brings a whole different sense of light and feeling to the piece. And because we did that, it also gave me a chance to refocus on some of the choreography. And Robert Post, who created the scenario with me and also helped with the characterizations, came back and worked with us as well. And so he added a lot of genuine thought to how people are when they're on stage, not necessarily when they're doing their dancing, but all those times between dancing when they're there. And I certainly think that the audience has been responding so beautifully to the everything that's new this year. Has been great.
The Nutcracker with Ballet Met and the Columbus Symphony, conducted by Peter Stafford Wilson, is running at the Ohio Theater now through the 26th of December. I have to ask you, do the ballet dancers, professional staff, artistic directors get tired of it?
I think the thought of it, when you get, you know, you get to about November, you go like, oh, you know, here it comes. You know. But when you actually get on stage, you're performing, you've got audiences there who are joining in the joy of what it is all about, those sort of personal preferences and things like that, you know, I'd rather be doing something new, that's all gone. You know, it is a wonderful opportunity. And I think one of the things that Nutcracker gives a professional dancer is the ability to come back to a work year after year, and they can really see where they are, what they're adding to this in the coming year. With so many works we do them once, we work on them very, very hard, but then they're not going to see that role for maybe 6 or 7 years, if at all. And the Nutcracker is a wonderful opportunity to hone your skills, to build on what you learned the previous year, and to really grow as artists.
How is the Nutcracker that you produce in the Ohio Theater different from what people might see on TV? Or people think they know the Nutcracker in terms of the story and how it is danced, but I'm sure every production is different. So how is yours different and maybe more inviting?
Well, I think that's very true. Everybody does have an image of what the Nutcracker is. And I know my son, when he was young, saw a particular version of the Nutcracker. And when we took him to see what we thought was our traditional version at another location, he was like, oh, well, that's all wrong. So I think when we made this Nutcracker, we really tried to pay attention to what people expect to see in a Nutcracker. It's not a ballet, I think, that's the occasion to do something avant-garde and way out there. I think
which Mark Morris does, doesn't he, with the hard nut, I think he calls it?
He does. Actually, he although there's some very Mark Morris contemporary or 1950s twists to it, he actually went back very much to the original story that Hoffman wrote as a lot of his impetus behind that. And I actually looked at probably about 50 different Nutcrackers before I actually staged this one. And there were many things about the way he approached his Nutcracker that I enjoyed. I certainly haven't set it anywhere near the same kind of period as him or used the same style of choreography, but there are aspects of the way he created that I think were very inviting and very familial. And so I think it's important with a ballet like the Nutcracker to not only have all those traditional elements in there, but also a few little things that surprise, but don't like throw you off completely. And I think that's certainly what we've tried to do. And the storyline is something that's also, I think, incredibly important. The Nutcracker tends to be a ballet where you've got one act where there's all story and not much dancing, and then another act where there's all dancing and not much story. And one of the things that we really worked with Robert on was how to tie the whole thing together to make sure there's enough dancing in the first act so that you're not just waiting for the second act if you're a dance fan, and to make sure that there's enough stimulation and changing and storyline in the second act if you started to fall asleep by the time the Grand Pas de Deux comes out, which unfortunately with a lot of versions you can tell as soon as that music starts playing there's going to be at least five children that will start crying. And I don't know whether it's the key of the piece of music, but it's quiet and everyone's meant to be serious and there's always that we've reordered the music just a little bit in the act two so that the Grand Pas de Deux couple traditionally would do a pas de deux, two solos, and then the coda. And that's a big chunk of classical ballet in one hunk. Now, they do all those things, but we just spread them out a little bit so that the pas de deux and the coda are next to each other, but their solos happen at different times. And I think it also helps make the Sugar Plum Fairy a little bit more stand out so we don't wait until an hour and a half into the show to see her.
Ballet Met's Nutcracker is at the Ohio Theater now through December 26th. Gerard Charles and Robert Post. Gerard is the choreographer.
Yes.
Robert wrote the book. Did he? Or
yeah, together we wrote the libretto.
Robert Post, very
well-known
actor, mime artist locally. Peter Stafford Wilson conducting the Columbus Symphony. Go, you'll have a wonderful time. I went and I had a blast, and I'm probably going to go back. Stephen Anderson is the artistic director of Catco Phoenix. The last time you were here, you were about to become artistic director of Catco Phoenix. Now you are artistic director of Catco Phoenix, which is pretty much a new company.
Yes.
You are about to close a wonderful show, a radio play of a wonderful, It's a Wonderful Life, no less. You tackled an icon.
Yeah,
with
there you
that.
Go. No, It's a Wonderful Life, the live radio play.
Talk about that.
Well, we were looking for our Nutcracker. You know, we always want to have something that around the holidays that families can come to see. It's a Wonderful Life was a wonderful, or is an incredible favorite of my own. And this is being done all across the country right now. And it's become one of the new holiday classics. Unfortunately, in our new connected world, the fact that it's being done in St. Louis and it's being sold on Ticketmaster and it's being done in Columbus and it's being sold on Ticketmaster, people sometimes get confused and buy tickets for other performances in other cities.
No kidding,
yes.
Really? Oh.
If you don't pay attention, you can get in trouble.
You better get in your car then and drive ahead of you.
So, you know, it's just funny how connected we are now. And it happened that because it's Christmas, that these two overlapped. But it's a lovely show. It's not really a recreation of the movie, although the story is the same. I mean, if you want to watch the movie, then you're going to watch the movie, which I think you can do at the Drexel today. Is it today or was that yesterday? At any rate, they were doing a special performance or showing of it. And so there's a young man who plays the Jimmy Stewart role, and there's a young woman who plays the Donna Reed role, and then the other three characters play everybody else in Bedford Falls, which is really pretty hysterical.
When you say radio play, how does that translate to what you see on the stage?
Well, you would see the sound effects actually being made. You would see the actors as they work through sometimes playing an entire scene with themselves, which is kind of an unusual thing. You see that sometimes on the streets of New York, but rarely on stage in Columbus. And it's remarkably visual. We look forward to probably bringing it back at some point and maybe even doing a broadcast of it. So
that would be something.
We'll
talk about that later off mic. So this was your Nutcracker, your Messiah, your Handel's Messiah. Did it work out for you?
It's done wonderfully. In fact, it was supposed to close last weekend. We have performances yet tonight and tomorrow night, and we're really thrilled with it. But then if It's a Wonderful Life is too much of the sweet side of Christmas, we have the sour side of Christmas.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. You have David Sedaris' The Santa Land Diaries. This is about somebody who was a department store elf, I think
he is. That's correct, and not a very happy one.
I actually was a department store Santa Claus.
Were you just?
At Macy's in New York many, many years ago.
Mr. Tree at Lazarus.
Were you really?
Yes,
yes.
I was.
And I was a very horrible human being. After on the fourth or fifth day of this, I was not a nice person.
Is that true? I find that so hard to believe.
Do you really?
Try?
Well, anyway, so when I saw John Putnam do this show a couple of years ago, I related on a lot of different levels. I had a wonderful time with that show. So tell us all about Santa Land Diaries.
Well, the Santa Land Diaries is actually a tradition at Catco. John Putnam created it, I think it was 5 years ago. And it's done in the studio theater in a small space. Bring in your drinks. There's cafe tables. It's very, very relaxed and open and not a traditional theater kind of experience. And he goes through the, let's just say the darker side of Christmas.
But, you know, I sat there watching the performance of it, and there was a lot of buzz in the audience while he was talking about, yes, that's exactly right. So I think it will resonate a great deal. There was a companion piece that used to be done with that, One Woman
Season
with a Woman,
screenings.
Which was very funny and a little bit over the top. I'm wondering if that's why it's not there now, but it was very funny.
Yeah, it was not for the faint of heart.
No. No, no.
So you and I might. I actually saw that. It was long before my time with Catco.
Right. I don't know what that says about us, that you and I probably love that. And anyway, we invite your phone calls. We invite your emails. 292-8513 is the number to call. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on our Facebook page, All Sides Facebook page. We'd like to hear from you. Maybe you have some ideas of what you'd like to do over the holidays to get out of the house. There's only so much football one can watch, and we love our kids and stuff, but enough. Let's get out of the house. Also, I want to talk about Cinderella, which is your next project, Gerard Charles, and you just mentioned that you're rehearsing or you're working on it now.
Yes, as you and I are sitting cozy in the studio here, they are at work at the studios at Ballet Met working on Cinderella, and actually a new piece by Jimmy Arante that's going to be performed in our performance space after Cinderella, which would be in March. So, yes, a lot of things going on, and, you know, the grass never stops growing, even in the winter at Ballet Met. We have also the Seven Deadly Sins coming up at the end of the year with the Shadow Box band, we've already sinned four times. We've got three sins left to go, and
I hope they're the good sins. They're really fun sins.
You
look forward to those.
We've got sloth to look forward.
Oh, that's great. Sloth is
not one of my favorites.
Gluttony, that's one of my favorites too. But something that you both have talked about on this show before, which is now being you're proving it out. You've always talked about collaboration. You've been working now with Shadowbox and Robert Post. You've merged two companies. That seems to be the way things have to go now.
It's going to be a very different world, I think, the days of saying, well, you know, this is our audience and these are the people that we work with are just kind of over. And, you know, Gerard and I have collaborated a couple
yes,
of
you've,
times
you've
on,
done a couple
on,
of pieces
on
with,
works
with
Alice
other.
In Wonderland and Aladdin at Ballet Met, which were great experiences. And I think what we find is that these collaborations stretch us and change us, and we learn. I, frankly, as a writer, happen to overwrite a little. A lot, sometimes way a lot. And one of the things that I learned in working through the ballet was that much more could be done without words. And so it's had a huge impact on my writing style.
Hold that thought. We're going to go away for 1 minute. We'll be back in 60 seconds. There are a couple of people waiting on the phone. I'll get to you as soon as I can. Thank you for holding. 292-8513. We'll be right back.
You can now listen to WOSU's Classical Music on Classical 101. Hear WOSU's classical music hosts all day, every day. Start your morning with Boyce Lancaster at 6 a.m., followed by Jennifer Hambrick at 10 a.m., and me, John Rittmeyer, at 2 p.m. Listen to Classical 101, classical music 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. For more information, visit wosu.org/classical101.
25 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. A chance of a few snow flurries today. Cloudy skies, a high of 28 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low of 11. Partly sunny for Saturday with a high of 25, but with the wind chill, it's going to feel like 0 degrees at times. Clear skies Saturday night and a low of 8 degrees. And looking ahead to Sunday, partly sunny skies and a high of 26. All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thank you, our producer, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy. All Sides Weekend today is talking about the arts in Central Ohio and points east, north, south, and west. My guests are Stephen Anderson, the artistic director of Catco Phoenix, and Gerard Charles, the artistic director of Ballet Met. And you mentioned earlier that Drexel is showing It's a Wonderful Life, and they've added some shows. Tomorrow night at 8:15, Monday the 20th at 7:50, and Thursday, December 23rd at 6:30. Bring your handkerchiefs. It's irresistible, though. It's a Wonderful Life at the Drexel. Thank you for that information.
And great to see on a full screen, I think.
Full screen, that's right.
I was just going to say, I'm also showing it at my place with hot toddies.
Are you really?
Sunday evening.
At your house?
Yeah.
Oh, I know your address, too. I mean, that's wonderful.
Come on over.
Thank you very much. Andy has been holding for a while. Thank you, Andy. He wants to talk about Catco. Andy, are you there?
I am here. I went yesterday to see It's a Wonderful Life by Catco, and I really enjoyed it. I especially enjoyed what I'm pretty sure were built-in gaffes in some of the cues and the sound effects, and just congratulations to them for that production. I wanted to ask how long this has been around, It's a Wonderful Life, as a radio production, and I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
Thank you, Andy, for your call. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, thank you, Andy. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And some of those gaffes probably were written in the script. And, you know, it's live theater, so sometimes things happen. However, it's about 3 or 4 years ago that this show premiered. And as I say, it's being produced all over the country because it's a great Christmas show and has great name recognition. And people like the story.
Did I assume permissions had to be gotten or copyrights had to be dealt with?
The playwright did that. A guy named Joe Landry actually created the play. And then there's also a version of his play that employs music, so we may look at that for another year.
And we have a call from Marilyn who wants to ask about the backstage world. Hello, Marilyn, are you there?
Hello. I was wondering if you might have a future program in which the costume designers of your two companies, and maybe from OSU or Otterbein Theaters, to talk about how you go about designing the costumes. We've seen some articles in the newspaper, but I thought that if you talked about the resources you have, the challenges, and outfitting a whole group of people in similar costumes, like the chorus and the ballet, would that be possible to do?
I think it's a great idea. Yes, I think that's a wonderful idea, and I thank you for that. This being Radio Week, we'll probably do some co-production online with that so people can log on and see the designs we're talking about.
Wonderful.
But I think that's a great idea. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and okay. I'm certainly happy to address a little bit about some of the particular interests of the way that the ballet costumes are put together, because so many times they are meant to look like a period costume, but if they were structured in the same way as a period costume would be, they would be impossible to move in the way that dance requires. You know, for instance, the Victorian period, it was very corseted and very held together, and that would not allow for a lot of freedom in choreography. This year we had new snow costumes made for Nutcracker, and we worked with we have an in-house designer. Her name is Rebecca Turk, and she is the head of our wardrobe department, and she made the designs for this piece. We had some – it always starts off with a conversation. You talk about what effect you want to have, and then she draws some sketches, and then I look at a sketch, and I say, well, that's a beautiful sketch, but I really have no idea what colors you're talking about here. And so she colorizes it for me, and then we make mock-ups for the costumes, usually out of a cotton fabric, so we can see how it fits, and we adjust – you know, we'll look at little – like where the line falls across the bust line or where the waistline is, and, you know, does it want to be a point or a curve? And, you know, then we look at it on more than one body because, as, you know, your caller intimated, there are different body types, and yet all these 12 ladies on stage are meant to look similar. So we make a costume and sometimes make it in two different sizes and try it on different bodies and then say, okay, if we've adjusted it this way, it worked fabulous on that person but not so well on that one. And so that's probably about a 3-week process right there before they actually get into cutting the real fabric, putting it on, making all the costumes. We have a dress run in the studio, and everyone complains about everything.
For the Nutcracker, how many costumes are we talking about? That's a big show.
I believe there are over 700 items.
Oh, stop it.
No,
really?
Absolutely, yes.
So are you looking at 700? You probably are looking at hundreds of sketches of different things and saying, yes, no, how are we going to build that?
Yes.
And I'm assuming also that they are built to last.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. The idea is not it'd be very beautiful today, but as soon as you wash it, it's no good anymore. And certainly, of course, with the amount of exercise they get in the costumes, they need to be frequently cleaned, and so they have to stand up to that as well. We had some beautiful costumes once for Beauty and the Beast, and it was Beauty's costume, and it was a beautiful shimmery fabric. It was shot with silver, lamé kind of through it, and it looked fabulous. And then it didn't look so shimmery after a while, and these wonderful fine silver threads rotted, and the whole thing just fell apart. And so we had
how
to
many performances did you get out of it?
It made it through the first run, but
so it,
you know,
it
the second run
itself.
It had to be replaced.
Yeah.
You know?
Our number is 292-8513. We welcome your calls with any questions or comments or suggestions about what to do art speaking in Central Ohio in the next few weeks. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Gerard Charles is Artistic Director of Ballet Met, and Stephen Anderson is Artistic Director of Catco Phoenix. Catco Phoenix, let's talk about Phoenix a little bit.
Well,
how's that collaboration working? Phoenix is a company. Did you found Phoenix?
Yeah. I founded the Phoenix 18 years ago, and in July we merged the two companies, so we're about the halfway point in the year. And it's been a really interesting process because, of course, each artistic organization has its own sort of culture, and so we're learning new ways to do things, as we were talking about before. The Phoenix is being overseen by our associate artistic director, Joe Bishara, and that was a little difficult for me because I've spent an awful lot of time working in classrooms with children, and one of the things that became very clear at the beginning was that there would be no more children. In fact, the board sat down with me and said, there will be no more children and there will be no more prisons, because I also did a lot of community action work in prisons.
Because Phoenix is a theater company for children, often performed by children, as I understand it. And you do a lot of things outside a stereotypical theater setting. I mean, you do work
in the community.
Prisons and in community. Mm-hmm. And so there was a little bit of a shift there. Huh?
Yeah, well, it's probably time. I'm not a kid
anymore.
Well, you did
anymore. It for
I did it a
many
good
years.
Long time, and,
yes.
And now I look at it this way. We have three wonderful professionals that work with us who are doing that work, so I've multiplied myself by three.
So that work didn't go away.
It didn't go away.
You had to shift a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Steve.
Yeah, my attention had to shift for the big company. And so in January, the 7th of January, we'll open with Encyclopedia Brown, which I did not direct, but I did adapt. And it will be directed by Joe Bishara, and then it will be touring for a while up to the Valentine Theater in Toledo and into some of the into Shelby and Logan County. So folk listeners who are out in those areas might want to take a look.
You also have for Catco's season coming up in the winter and spring some edgy, very provocative plays that should kind of pack the house. You have one by Joe Orton. That's an iconic name, the British playwright who I think died or was murdered 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm,
but
he
really his career was about two or three plays, and everybody was talking about him all the time, and they still are. Mm-hmm. You're doing What the Butler Saw, which I think was his first big success.
Yes, and Jeff Nelson is directing that, our artistic director emeritus, and it's a play that he is a real favorite of his, and in fact I saw him in it at the Ohio State University when I was a graduate student, which was more than two decades ago. It was many years ago, so it's great to have that
revival.
You are
the best preserved person. The way you talk about your age, which I think you exaggerate, you have to. Either that or you're drinking something really wonderful. 292-8513. We've got a couple of people on hold. I'll get to you in just a moment. You also have a very controversial play coming up called I Am My Own Wife by Doug Wright, which opens in February 2nd.
Yes, it's a fascinating story. It's a Pulitzer Prize winner. I will be directing it. An actor named Chris Roche, that some people may know, is going to play multiple roles.
I know him from Ohio State.
Yes.
He's a very talented young man.
He is very talented. He was in the Candide that I did.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Yes,
so at any rate, he plays a transgendered person who was able to save gay and lesbian people through World War II and Nazi Germany, and then on through the Cold War. And at the beginning, you begin to think that you understand who this person is, and then there are things that come up that make you wonder, well, Was she, in fact, a hero, or was she a collaborator? It's just a fascinating tour de force for Chris.
We look forward to that. We'll have you back as that comes, and we'll talk more about that because I think that's going to be interesting to a lot of different people. That's I Am My Own Wife, Catco's production. We have a call from Jenny who wants to ask about the Nutcracker. Jenny, hello.
Gerard?
Yes.
This is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
You know, Gerard, I was just wondering about the children that do not have enough money to see the performances. Is there anyone that's cheaper?
Well, Ballet Met actually does have a program called Kid Tix, and we give hundreds of tickets a year to the Nutcracker through various agencies. To the Homeless Families Shelter and a number of different other agencies. If anybody has an organization that they're interested in getting their participants to see the Nutcracker, they can call Ballet Met, and we'd be very happy to help them out with that.
You don't turn people away. You don't turn children away, I can imagine, that want to see the performance, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certainly there are also there's the High Five tickets available. So for high school students, $5 will get them in. And you have student rush discounts. And so there's a whole range of programs to help people be able to see the Nutcracker.
Are you still doing mornings at the ballet?
We are still doing mornings at the ballet. We did 3 mornings at the ballet this year, which allows schools to bring students to see the performance of the Nutcracker. And it's a combination of highlights of Act 1 and Act 2. So they get to see a little bit of everything.
I love you, Gerard.
Well, thanks, Jenny.
We all love Gerard. Thank you, Jenny, for your call. Thank you very much. Talk a little bit about the Friday afternoon open rehearsals you do on occasion. It's your performance space.
Yes, we've instituted this now this year. It's kind of official. We've always had them sort of randomly. But now this year, every year, every season that we're going to perform a piece on the Friday before it opens, we have an open rehearsal, and it's free for anybody to attend. There's no cost. You just drop by from 5 to 6. There's no guarantee of exactly what you're going to see. It's sort of like if you stop by a building site, you may see them actually building fabulous stuff, or you may see a lot of people sitting around looking at their navels. But it's always interesting to get a little bit behind the scenes and to really see what it takes to put the production together, because so many people see it on stage in its final elements. And it's a great chance to see the dancers working, how they learn things, how they get challenged by certain moves and things like that.
The other point I really want to make apropos of Jenny's call was that it's been my experience that all of our local arts organizations work very hard to be accessible. And, if special needs audiences or people can't afford the tickets, they get in. People do work very hard. I know the symphony does that, the opera. I know, Steve, you've done that for years. Mm-hmm. Gerard, you just described how that happens. So let's make the point that really they want people to come into the theater, and they especially, it seems, want people to come in who may never have been there before, you know?
Well, we believe it's a transformational experience to see the ballet, to see the symphony, to see the theater. And people need to know that it's for them.
Yeah, exactly right. It's for them.
And
right.
Certainly the work that you've done with Phoenix and the work that we do in the schools as well, we actually bring what we do to the schools, to students who would never even know that the Ohio Theater exists even. It's amazing.
Do you, when you do that work, you probably doesn't happen every day, but do you see the lights go on?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
isn't
often
that a gift?
It's the children that have been sort of left on the side that the school may have given up on. There's nothing to inspire them. And then they suddenly become so engaged, so involved. It's wonderful to see.
And in a perfect world, you'd do anything for them. But just being there, I think, is a huge, huge step. We have a call from Jackie, who wants to ask about different styles for the Nutcracker. Hi, Jackie. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is for Gerard. I wondered if he could talk a little bit about the different versions of the Nutcracker. I noticed that sometimes there's Marie, sometimes Clara. The different characters are different. There's Mother Ginger, sometimes not. And so I wonder if you could explain where the versions come from and why.
Yes, absolutely. Well, of course, the original version of choreographed was in Russia, so a lot of the Masha name came from there. Marie was actually the name of the heroine, if you will, in the book, and Clara was the name of her doll. But for some reason, people thought the name Clara would be a better name for the heroine of the story, so the name kind of got shifted in many people's versions. The music, of course, is usually the strong founding fabric of the ballet. At various times in history, people decided, wouldn't it be great to update this and do something fabulous? I mean, there's some very, very dark versions of the Nutcracker out there right now. With Duke Ellington's arrangement of Tchaikovsky's music, there's a number of jazz Nutcrackers out there. In St. Louis, they have a version called the Mad Cracker, which is a contemporary dance company does this. They have jugglers and roller skating mice and all sorts of things in there. So almost anything you can imagine has been done to the Nutcracker at some time and point. There's short versions of it, one-act versions of it, and there's greatly extended versions. I know the version in Tulsa uses many other – there's not enough Nutcracker music. There's bits of Eugene Onegin, what Polonaise in there, Ooh. And all sorts of other grand pieces of music. So there's
– Are choreographers or directors free to do whatever they want with the music?
Yes, unfortunately for Tchaikovsky, his estate no longer holds copyright to it, so there's all sorts of things being done to music. I've really tried to keep we've changed some of the order of the music in Act Two for dramatic reasons, but I've tried not to make any bizarre cuts, and certainly the tempos are another thing that a lot of choreographers really will either pull down a tempo to almost a non-stopping point or really, really fast, and I'd really try to work with the conductor and the various musicians to talk about what would be the proper tempo to play these pieces of music.
I wish Peter Stafford Wilson were here so I could ask him, does he have to conduct it the same every performance?
Regretfully for him, he does.
Yes,
and
say,
everyone will tell him when he doesn't. No, there's certain latitude in there. I think so long as it's musically got integrity, then it's good. What is hard for dance is if the tempos change rapidly within a section, because you're anticipating what the music's going to sound like in maybe the next couple of bars, and so you're timing your preparations and your movements so they match where the crescendo is going to be or where the pause in the music is going to be. And if the music is somewhat erratic in tempo, then it's really hard to gauge that. And then if the conductor is really looking at the dancer, they think, oh, they're going fast, I need to go faster, where in fact they're going fast to try and catch up so they can slow down in another point. So it's a real choreographed duet between the conductor and the dancers. And Peter's wonderful
yes,
at watching and knowing what's going on. And I always enjoy working with him. He's really great.
One more question about that. How many children are on stage?
In any given show, we've got a little over 70 children. We've got over 136 altogether in the performances, but they
age ranges.
I think the youngest is 7, and then we have high school graduates.
And how much rehearsal do they get? How long are you in the studio rehearsing this? Most of your principal dancers probably have done it many times, but still, you need to get your body into it. But the children, I would think, need a lot of rehearsal.
We begin with the auditions for the children in the middle of September, and then they start working right after that. They have a rehearsal usually once a week for an hour and a half, depending on what their roles are. And that's consistently going all the way through around Thanksgiving time, when everyone else is enjoying Thanksgiving. Ballet Met
is not.
Cajoles everybody on Friday and Saturday and Sunday to spend all day working on the Nutcracker. And we usually have all the children there as well as the company. And usually that's the first day that everyone gets together. And so that's quite a massive event. And this year it was even more exciting, because that same weekend was also the weekend we were packing the trucks to go to Syracuse, where we opened the show the next week. And so we had the children and the company and the new set pieces all together for the one and only time before you saw it all on stage, with a different set of kids, because in Syracuse we had mostly local kids there.
And you had their parents too, but that's another story. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking with All Sides Weekend the Arts with Stephen Anderson and Gerard Charles. 292-8513 is the number to call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are going away for 90 seconds. We'll be back very quickly. Stay tuned.
When the film Winter's Bone was released earlier this year, Fresh Air film critic David Edelstein described it as miraculous. It's now out on DVD. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from the director, Deborah Granick, and the author of the novel it's based on, Daniel Woodrell. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon. Spend some time getting caught up on what's happening in your world every Friday night on WOSU-TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week. For local news, watch Columbus on the Record, hosted by WOSU's Mike Thompson at 8:30. And then continuing at 9, it's the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a program that features an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Spend your Friday night with WOSU-TV. That's tonight, beginning at 8. 25 degrees in downtown Columbus. A few snow flurries today. Cloudy skies, a high of 28 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low of 11 degrees. For Saturday, partly sunny skies, but a cold day, a high of 25 degrees with a wind chill of zero. Saturday night, clear skies and a low of 8 degrees overnight. For Sunday, partly sunny and a high of 26. And looking ahead to Monday, still cold, partly sunny, and a high of 27. All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy with Gerard Charles, the Artistic Director of Ballet Met, and Stephen Anderson, the Artistic Director of Catco Phoenix. I'm not Artistic Director of anything. I can barely find middle C on the piano. However, I would say that my usual beat is on our classical music service, which is now Classical 101, classical music all day, every day, 24-7 at 101 on the FM dial. So after we go off the air at noon, you're welcome to go over and sample the music at 101. And also, shameless plug, this Sunday afternoon at 4, we will bring you live from the First Congregational Church in downtown Columbus a service of lessons and carols. 4 o'clock this Sunday on Classical 101. Classical music all day, every day, and we're very excited and pleased about that. And I know you both are, too.
I am. I'm so glad to have that back all the time.
And your constituents are, too, and your audiences are, too, and public is, too. Thank you very much for that. Let's change the subject a little bit. I do want to talk about politics. There's a new administration coming into the state government in January. I'm not suggesting anything. I'm simply asking. I don't know the answer. What is this going to mean for funding, for the two of you, for your companies, for audiences? One piece of really good news is that Milt Bauman has been officially named the head of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. He's been on this program. He gets it. He's a smart, terrific guy. But how about at the state level? What's going to happen, do you think?
I think the jury is out. We don't really know what's going to happen in the upcoming biennium. And, are we concerned? Of course we are. Are people who love the arts concerned? They should be. That's not pointing fingers. It's just saying this is a very, very difficult economic time for this state. And, it's our job to point out that the arts are an economic driver, that when Gerard does the Nutcracker how many times?
We have 15 performances.
Right. That people come from many miles around to come and see that and spend money at both the theater and at restaurants and hotels. And so, we have to make that case.
Do you think do you expect the people to be receptive? Will they talk to you? Will they listen to you, Gerard? I mean, are you finding that you're going to be paid attention to? Are they aware?
I'm sure they are aware. And we've got a wonderful Citizens for the Arts group as well that really helps speak for all the arts
in Ohio.
Is that
a lobbying group?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I think I'm sure that the administration, whether it's the old one or the new one, were always bombarded by everybody's special interests. And it's very easy to say, well, the arts are yet another special interest, and what do they do? I think that the arts are such a crucial part of who we are as human beings, and beyond the economic driver, which I think is way underestimated. People think, the arts is a bunch of people that work on the edge, for nothing. There is the economic activity we generate as far as bringing audiences to the theater, and it's not just the artists on stage, it's all the technicians who work behind the scenes, the people who administer the theaters, the people who are vendors in the theaters. All those kinds of people rely heavily on the success of the arts to have their businesses. But beyond that, there's something about the quality of life, and the investment stays right here with our companies, with Ballet Met, with Catco Phoenix. Most of the actors, reside here. We're not bringing in a guest who makes a nice sum of money and then goes off and lives in another part of the country. Our people live here, they work here, they raise their families here. They are very much a part of the community here. So any investments made in them comes back many times in the community.
And you both and your companies both teach. I mean, you are that was your mandate, Stephen, when you founded Phoenix Theater. It was for children, and it was for children in all areas of the economic strata, including young people who were incarcerated.
Yes.
You have both, and you have, Gerard, you have an enormous school. That's a big part of what you do.
Yeah, we have a school of over 1,600 students over an annual period. And then also we do, like Phoenix Theater does as well, go into the schools. And more I think we're finding that the schools are looking to us to provide content for them because they don't have the resources themselves to do that.
Mm-hmm. So in order for you to make that happen, your resources have to stay pretty healthy because it's going to cost somebody to do that crucial work.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
This, I think, is also a very good time for the arts, specifically in Columbus. And I always like to make the point that even with the money being horrible, the arts continue to thrive. For example, I was yesterday at the Columbus Museum of Art, which has just done a huge, magnificent renovation. And it's going to have a day on New Year's Day. It's going to be open to the public for free. It's going to be a big party, and I was there yesterday for the press opening, and it is magnificent, and it's a resource I didn't really get that it was there, so I learned something. That's been done. The Columbus Symphony has a new conductor who people are buzzing very happily about. He's a French-Canadian named Jean-Marie Zaitouni, and to your point, Gerard, he is moving here. He's
absolutely
not going to be commuting from Montreal. He's buying a condo or a house for himself, and he's settling down. And I think as people get to know him, they will enjoy him as a person and as a musician. So I think there's a lot of great stuff going on, but we just have to – I guess, do you have to keep pounding out the message?
Yes, you really have to continue to that message. And anybody, you know, in the listening audience who cares about the arts should join the Ohio Citizens for the Arts.
They have
a website. Yes, OCA. I think it's OCA.org or might be net. I should have my facts right. Do a Google search, the Ohio Citizens for the Arts.
It's easy
because
enough.
It's a small amount for membership, but that money goes towards advocating for the arts.
How effective are groups like that?
They're highly effective.
Really?
They really are because they represent a large constituency, and legislators are interested in speaking to people who are representing large constituencies. So the numbers of people who belong are important.
If you had to, if God forbid you had to cut more, could you do it? Each of you financially, I mean, if you had to make more and more sacrifices. And you all, let's make the point.
I think we've already proved that, haven't we?
I was going to say, I mean, yeah, but I'm being devil's advocate here because that's something people are going to wonder because, you know, if every time you turn on the news that the deficit in the state of Ohio is devastating, it's worse than people thought, it's, you know, we have a new administration coming in and they're going to have to grapple with that. I don't envy them. But what's left to cut?
I would actually urge a lot of people that condemn bad management and the arts organizations actually take a look at the arts organizations and see how incredibly effective they are with the limited resources they have, how when they know that they have to bring a product to the public, they will do everything they can to make it happen in as high a quality as they can and not go, oh, well, we don't have any money. We just won't do this anymore.
Right.
I think, you know, that is such a, you know, money is certainly an important part of allowing us to survive. And I think that most of us over the past few years have made significant reductions to the way we work, the amount of money we can spend on things. I do believe we've already lost a couple of organizations. I think that we will not be able to exist in the manner that we do today. The expectations people have of both artistic standards, frequency, all those kind of quantitative items will probably, if there's further cuts, be more than obvious to the public.
But you, Gerard, have something. You have full productions going on every month through the spring. I mean, you are doing Nutcracker now. You have you've already done Dangerous Liaisons and the Mozart Requiem. You have Cinderella. Cinderella has to be a big show.
It is a big show, yes.
And is that Prokofiev?
No, we're actually doing Glazunov music,
yeah. Okay. That's going to be at the Capitol Theater. And then Ballet Met Up Close, which is in March at your performance space. Again, that space is behind your main building.
Yes, it's just off of Grant Avenue. And that is a wonderful place to see dance. It's a different experience than sitting in a proscenium theater. You're so close to the dancers. You really get an immediacy of the energy that's coming off the stage. stage, and you're right there with them. And we're bringing back for that program, again, it's important in the arts not just to recycle but to create new. And David Parsons, who many years ago, when I was first a dancer at Ballet Met, created a ballet for Ballet Met. He was an unknown choreographer. He created a piece of Ballet Met. I was in it. He took it to New York. He started to do a few shows in New York. Now he has his own company that's 25 years old, I think it is now. And he's coming back after quite a long absence to create a new duet for that. And, you know, he's a big star now. And so we're looking forward to that. And Jimmy Arante, one of our dancers, is creating a new piece on that program as well.
He attracts a lot of attention, Jimmy Arante. He gets a lot of attention. People, he has a big fan base.
He is a wonderful artist and a wonderful human being.
But he lives here, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a local. Who else in the company are you really excited about?
Oh, well, you're going to ask me to pick my favorite children now. Luckily, I only have one child in my family.
I love everybody, you know.
They're all wonderful. Everybody. The thing about a company is whether they're the featured dancer on that particular program or they're performing a lesser role, every single one of those parts is important, and what they contribute to it really adds up to the sum. You can have a fabulous soloist up front and the people behind look like they're bored to death and couldn't care less. You're having a horrible performance. Yeah. And likewise, you know, everyone on stage is great except for that one person in the front, you'll notice that. But, you know, so everybody contributes. And at Ballet Met, we have an attempt to try and give everyone opportunities. And so if someone is doing the lead role, say the Sugar Plum Fairy in the Nutcracker at the matinee in the evening, they could well be in the Waltz of the Flowers or the Snow. So they really get to understand the challenges of everything that we do on stage. And it's not easy being in the corps de ballet. And it's not easy being a soloist. You just do what you want to do. You know, there are different demands, different stresses on each one. And it really, I think, helps them become rounded artists.
What does it mean? I wanted to ask you this. When a dancer says, I have to go take class, what does that mean?
We do class every morning. And interestingly, in England, take class means teach it. And in America, take class means do class. An hour and a half. It starts at the bar. It starts with gentle, or depending on your frame of mind, supposedly gentler exercises that build up.
How early is this?
We start at 9:15 most days.
Right. And
So 9:15 to 10:45 is the usual class time for Ballet Met.
And is that everybody in the company?
Everybody in the company should take class.
And that's
together.
Required. That's
The union strongly suggests it, but we cannot require it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
So, during that course, it's pretty nonstop. You go something with your right leg and then with your left leg, and then you do the next exercise. And you build up from gentle, warming up kind of exercises through some very technically demanding moments, which are there to sort of like help build yourself technically, your talents, and also to prepare you for the day.
Do you take class yourself, or do you give the class? I mean, are you at the bar yourself? Because, you know, your career was quite astonishing as a dancer.
Yes, I have not been at the bar, the ballet bar, for a while. But certainly when we teach class, we have to demonstrate things.
Yes.
So my body is still moving around.
Yes, sir. You see,
don't let him kid you. Yeah, I've worked with him. It's incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He can still do, I think, everything he ever could.
Me, who waddles but can barely walk, I'm astounded by the level of skill and the talent. And I'm somebody who's walked through the building a couple of times of a Wednesday afternoon, and every room is filled. There's music coming from every corner of that building. There's work going on all the time. I just love that environment. There's a real beehive of
energy.
What's
it's
going
great.
On? Yeah.
I make excuses to
yeah,
go
just
over
to go
there.
Over there. Yeah, just,
there's always something exciting happening.
You can almost lose weight by watching them. You can't, but you almost in a perfect world you'd be able to.
That could be our new profit
yes,
line.
Yes. Come lose weight by watching Ballet Met. Stephen Anderson, Catco Phoenix is in the middle of their first season. You probably weren't sure what this was going to be like when it was suggested to you, when it was broached to you. I can't imagine any board telling you what to do, but okay.
We all skipped down the road together.
Yes, we all walked down the Cupid's Grove together. Is it your expectations? Is it different? What are you looking forward to?
You know, the thing that is the most exciting to me is that theater in Columbus was a lot of little silos, and there was territory that people guarded very carefully, and they'd draw the line, and they were this company or they were that company. We have been very open and talked and imagined various theater companies talking together. And we're going to be announcing, here's the little scoop.
Tease me.
A staged reading series which PNC is sponsoring. And we will actually be paying a number of the companies to be involved in that project. And so that's a message of goodwill. And I've encouraged them to try other actors that they haven't used before or other directors. And so those will be primarily on the second Wednesdays beginning in January.
The readings, will they be of new work or established pieces?
That you should know.
Great, that's wonderful.
Is the way we're doing it. And each company has decided what that should be.
Which could be new work or could be something that is underperformed or something you read about but you don't actually see or hear. And, you know, reading a play is one thing, but they are written to be heard.
That's it.
Yeah, getting there.
And we're doing something kind of crazy with it. We're putting a Twitter screen behind the actors so that people can interact in time and space. So we'll open with my old boss, Ed Graysick, come back to the 5-9, Jimmy Dean.
Oh, yeah, sure.
His new play called The Blue Moon Dancing. So Ed Graysick fans might want to pop by. That's going to be the 26th of January. And we're very excited.
So starting in January. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at Wednesday nights. Down at the Reif Center.
Down at the Reif Center, 6:30. There'll be a cash bar and food available for purchase. Thank you. We're trying to do things in a little bit different way.
That's a great idea. You mentioned PNC Bank, and last spring they were very much in the news in the arts community here because they made a lot of grant money available. There was a press conference at the Lincoln Theater. They really stepped up. They made a commitment to support the arts in Central Ohio.
Yes.
How's that working out?
Very well. We've been involved in three different grants that they've granted to either us or people that we're associated with, and it's been a wonderful vote of confidence in the arts, and we're very grateful to PNC for being there.
Yeah, they've shown some real leadership.
I'm wondering, it's great to know how that came about, because was it unexpected? It was sort of an unexpected boon.
They had programs like this, and I believe it was Philadelphia. And the local leadership said, we need that for Columbus. Mm-hmm. And so, it was great leadership, both on the part of the bank and on the part of the local folks who work at PNC.
One point I want to continue making, and this, as long as I have a microphone, is that if you read any news about the arts online, you know that things like the Philadelphia Orchestra, one of the great orchestras of the world, is near bankruptcy. Every week, some other company is shutting down. The Baltimore Opera, after 55 years, went out of business completely. Tragic. That's not happening in Columbus, Ohio. You are really working hard to do more with less. And the quality hasn't suffered at all. And there's either some kind of a drug you're both ingesting to make that possible, or more to the point, I think you're that good. But where in these big cities, these really entrenched, famous arts organizations are ceasing to exist, really pay attention, Columbus, because that is not happening in here. They've been close. They've been teetering, certainly, but mm-hmm. they've pulled back. There's new leadership. There are new artistic directors. There's a new conductor who's going to do great things in Columbus. Pro Music is thriving, giving wonderful concerts. They're having a search for a new music director. What's the secret? Is it because the public demands it?
I think we don't have as many old, entrenched organizations.
That might be
good.
I
mean, we're young, and that's got its curses in some ways, but I think because of that, we don't have this is the way we always do it kind of issues, and I think we've been able to be a lot more flexible and responsive in a quick way to the realities around us. Certainly, we never had deep pockets to sort of like fall back on, and so if something wasn't going well, then we'd make a cut right away rather than saying, oh, maybe it'll turn around in 6 months or a year.
You did triage pretty quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think in many of those communities, the organization stepped back and said, well, we'll always exist.
I'm not telling tales.
Yeah, yeah. And that hasn't occurred here. We mm-hmm. looked around and said, if we don't do something, we are going to be in deep trouble. And no one will be there to blame but ourselves. We have to be nimble and agile.
Do the leaders of our local arts organizations ever have coffee and bagels in the morning and
they schmooze? They have monthly meetings.
They do.
The Columbus Cultural Leaders Consortium. And they advocate for the arts with with local government and strategize together and that's also not happening in a lot of cities.
It's not happening in a lot of cities, and it seems to be page one of the handbook these days that you must really do that. So it's to everybody's credit that they are stepping up. I'm Christopher Purdy. All Sides Weekend, the Arts was our program today, and I do thank very much Stephen Anderson, the artistic director of CATCO Phoenix, now showing this, just about to close. One more chance to see.
Two more chances tonight and tomorrow. It's a Wonderful Life, the live radio play, 4690939.
And then the Santaland Diaries
Diaries
running,
till the 26th.
Which is a hoot with Jonathan Putnam. Don't miss that. And Gerard Charles' Ballet Met, The Nutcracker, is at the Ohio Theater. I do thank you very much both for being here. Amy Jurevich, thank you very much for your good help. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.